I count you my friend. There's no doubt about it. It truly is good to be here. I can remember 30 years ago, this year, being in this sanctuary and having the privilege of being part of the ordaining, installing team as Sylvia Faulkner began her ministry here. If there's one thing that I've learned through the years, every day has an opportunity to bring a little more light and a little more wisdom into our lives. And as long as we're open to that, we discover that every moment is the current moment. And as a result, even though we have been apart from one another for 25 some odd years, it seems but just a whisper, just a yesterday away. And those who have gone before, who had they lived unto this very moment, would no doubt be out in the congregation as well. Names like Abraham Bird from St. James Baptist Church. Names like Fred Beck, who was the chaplain at Alton Memorial Hospital at the time when Sylvia was the pastor here. And various others, Orrin Anderson, and names that you would recall again and again. And they would join in saying how we have shared times together that brought incredible laughter. In fact, one of the funniest jokes I ever heard in my life that I have told at least 20 or 30 times since Sylvia told it at a very serious meeting we were having of ministers at Alton Memorial Hospital when Fred Beck was just getting ready to introduce the speaker. Sylvia had delivered the punchline. And I broke out in laughter and we disrupted the entire meeting. So we have laughed together. We have we've done things that I believe turned the community around. And one in particular is I remember when I went on as president of the of what was known as the Alton Pastors Association, Abraham Bird and I got together and we talked and we said, we really do believe that if we're going to be able to grow as a religious community and are going to lay aside some of the things that separate us, we need to have a new president and a person with an open mind and an open heart and a person who lights a lamp of knowledge every day that she steps into the pulpit. And so we decided and approached Sylvia and asked her if she would be willing to be the new president of a new organization. And we were starting a new organization by the name of the AAARL, the Alton Area Alliance of Religious Leaders. When we did that, and when Sylvia said yes, we had three of the most incredible years that that organization had in its entire history. We opened up the doorway for persons of all faith and of maybe even non-faith and yet leaning toward a care and a compassion for humanity to be able to come together in a kindred mind and spirit to break bread, to take on issues of justice and concern for the human community. I rejoice in being able to say, Sylvia Faulkner is my friend, and to be able to be here to listen to her speak to you in a congregation where I have many of you who are friends and where we have worked side by side on issues of human rights amendment and issues of the environment and issues of justice for our community. Before I sit down, just a special gift to you, Sylvia, in the words of a poem. This is perhaps not only one of the greatest lessons was ever given to me came from a Unitarian, and it was before I went overseas to serve. And he said, whatever you do, George, just don't try to be religious. He said, but rather concern yourself with building bridges, concern yourself with, and I was going to Africa, with building outhouses, with talking about good health, you know, the really earthy things of life. And in the process, people will say, oh my gosh, what a religious person has walked here. That's one of the greatest lessons that I learned. But I also learned that every moment that a person comes into our life, whether they are a child or whether they're a person in advanced years, whether they're in the greatest of health or whether they happen to be in hospice, that that person and us, as we meet together, touch a bit of heaven. And it's a bit of heaven's kiss. And so, as you step into the pulpit, I would share with you a poem that I wrote that's written along the line of 13th century Persian poetry that's called Heaven's Kiss. And your presence here today reminds me of how we all, in some way, have our souls interlinked and combined with heaven's kiss. It goes like this. My soul is ignited inflamed with passion for the one who created my inmost self, seduced, embraced by the divine, an ecstasy no world can tell, explosion of uncontrollable joy and bliss, and how I quiver from heaven's kiss. That inner pocket of quiet, rest, and play, the place the ancients call the heart, has come to life, and sweet romance once more has caused me to dance and given life to clay. Sylvia, your presence always brings life and learning and knowledge and peace. It's my privilege to present to you your former pastor, and I know our good friend, Sylvia Faulkner.
Oh, this feels familiar. Well, Kleber, you mentioned that I was going to give some wisdom, and I don't think so. I think I'm going to remember and share those memories with you. I graduated from Star King in Berkeley, and that at that time, Star King was thought of as the place you took courses when you wanted to learn to basket weave. Not true, but we had a very strange reputation. And I sent out my book telling who I was and what I was looking for. And I got this strange packet back from a town named Olton, Illinois, Southern Illinois. Now, I'm a Pacific Northwest person. I lived in Alaska, and to me, the ideal church would be a kind of upbeat, semi-Berkeley church. And so I turned the search committee down, said thank you, but no thank you. Well, those of you who remember Gene Duncanson, he was on the search committee. And what Gene did was a salesman's ploy called the puppy dog sales. The puppy dog sale, you say, here, take the puppy home for a week, feed it, pet it, and if you don't like it, you can bring it back. So Gene called me and said, hey, we like your packet, and no obligations, just come and you can meet us and then go home, you don't need to stay. So I agreed. Well, I came into Lambert Airport, and here was Gene in the most awful looking white van I'd ever seen. Still had four fenders, but that was about it. And I thought, what am I getting into? Well, the van stayed together until we hit the Alton Bridge. The old Alton Bridge. I nearly lost my teeth, and they're really my teeth. I thought, if I don't die coming across this bridge, I might accept their offer. Well, the next thing Gene did was take me to the Stratford Hotel. Now remember, I'm used to shiny, painted. He took me up to the room, linoleum on the floor, old tub, old toilet. I'm not sure what kind of bed, and I thought, oh my gosh, 1940s, what's happening? He took me down to the dining room, and I thought, 1930, I'm going backwards. Finally, we came to the church where the search committee was waiting. There was David Wiseman, see if I can pick people out. Where's Ruth Shaw? Ruth, where are you sitting? Ruth Shaw, Gene Duncanson, Joe Rousseau, Eric Sturley, and one other person? Am I forgetting? Ginger McCall, too. And hi, Ginger. And I walked in to this sanctuary and became speechless. This continues to be the most beautiful sanctuary I've ever preached in. You can imagine interning at the San Francisco church, all very shiny and very clean and beautiful, and walking into this 1836 church. The red velvet carpets, the windows, as Mitch said, the chandeliers. I fell in love just instantly. I could imagine being up here preaching, walking down the aisles. And they had way back here an old organ. You didn't have to push the bellows, but oh, I don't know how old it was. In Jane Broadbooks, you all remember Jane. She'd walk down the aisle and just make that organ sing. So, talking to the search committee, they were all such down-to-earth people, so intelligent people. You know, I'm not sure what I expected from wheat and corn country. But you know, I began to find that Alton, they had porches and sidewalks. I'm talking from Anchorage, Alaska. We didn't have sidewalks and porches. And people would walk by and say hello to you and stop and talk and care in a different way about you. It was the Midwest, a wonderful place. And it didn't take me long to say yes. I did preach in the old Thomas Jefferson Church in order for them to hear me and to say yes. Well, at that time, I was a member of the Anchorage Women's Liberation Group. and probably, well, definitely a radical, pushy broad. Do you think? In fact, Abraham Bird, minister of which church was it? St. James Baptist. He said, when I first met you, I thought you were the pushiest broad I'd ever met. We were very good friends by then. I was told that the Ministers Association did not accept Unitarians because we were not known as Christian, and this was an exclusive group. Well, you can imagine what that did. I was both sad and felt challenged, and I thought, well, they're not going to accept me, let's see. And I heard about their next meeting, went in, and I would imagine four or five thought I was someone's secretary. finally, they asked me to come in and be in their meeting. And I found the collegiality I was looking for, thanks to George Orrin Abraham. True, they did ask me to become president, and the first thing I did was talk to the group about meeting at different churches. Each church would cook soup and bread and serve the rest of us. And that minister would talk about the roots of his religion. And of course, there was a great deal of laughing about the runny Presbyterian soup. You know, you put a couple pieces of meat and dump water in it, and that was soup. We had a wonderful time. Well, the ministers did such a good job that I decided we needed a TV program. So I started something called Many Mansions, little local TV station here. Got an intern from Principia who did all my research. I told them, hey, this is good, you can get points for this. Did a beautiful bunch of research, and each week we interviewed a minister, ask him questions, and it was good for the Principia person. The Equal Rights Amendment was a big issue in Illinois at that time. And the first year I was here, we were asked, my three kids and I, to represent Alaska. And they wanted people from every state to be at the Capitol. So we did come represent Alaska, and a reporter, hope I can say this in church, this is a Unitarian church, the reporter asked my youngest son, Curtis, well, what do you think about this woman's liberation stuff and this Equal Rights Amendment? And Curtis, who was 10, said, well, I think just because a woman doesn't have a penis doesn't mean she should get less money. uh, I was so proud of him. Oh. And yes, as Mitch said, we did march down the main street shouting and banners. And the incident I loved the most, we had a big NOW meeting in one of the mansions right next to Phyllis Schlafly. And there were, she had to bring in a lot of chairs. And she said, guess where I got the chairs? I borrowed them from Phyllis Schlafly. And it felt so good to be sitting in your chairs talking about women. Well, we did have a fire here one day. The old folks probably remember. We had Christmas decorations all across and candles burning. Beautiful. I was preaching, and suddenly Gene Dungason leaped over the pews, and I thought, oh my gosh, what's happening? And this whole side was on fire. The Christmas decorations caught on fire. I have so many memories of this wonderful, wonderful place. And I've been asked to talk about one person who made a big difference in my life. I stayed with Martha Holden when I first came here. And I've written something here about her. We have Martha's pottery and paintings out in back. I never knew that Martha had a front door. You always came into Martha's house by the back door, and around the door and to the side were pieces of green pottery, glazed pottery, pottery that didn't quite come out right. And as you came in the back door, her glassed-in porch also was filled with pottery and jars. And she had a window she left open all the time for Sam, her cat. And Sam was a big part of Martha and visiting Martha. She had taught Sam, who was a big, long-haired, gray and white cat, to ring a bell. She had a little cowbell on her doorknob, and Sam would hit it when he wanted to go out onto the porch. Then he could get out the window. And Sam loved to be brushed every day. He'd go into a coma when you brushed him. He was just... Then when you went in from the glassed-in porch, Martha had a big kitchen with a huge table. Just took up most of the kitchen, on which was a large brown glazed bread bowl. Going into Martha's house was having the constant smell of fresh baked bread. Or if she had stew or soup on the kitchen, it would swirl around the bread smell. Absolutely wonderful aroma. And the kitchen was the center, the heart of her home. And to the left was a narrow living room filled with hangings that she had done. Wonderful fabric hangings that you had to feel and touch. She had one large mohair hanging, and she'd say every time a person would come, "Someday I've got to finish that." She never did. Also, a bookcase of art books, Picasso, Matisse, Degas. And she graciously offered me her larger bedroom to stay until I could find a place. The first few nights, I was awakened by a kind of shaking, rocking feeling in this bedroom. And I found out it was the Amtrak that ran very close, and it would just really rock the bed. I loved it. It was like mama rocking me to sleep. Martha connected with the earth in just about everything she did. The clothes she wore had that kind of Birkenstock feel to them. The pottery she made usually was in earth tones with wonderful earth glazes to them. And she had a shop down in Mineral Springs with all of her ware across the tables that they were. She loved to go on picnics. We'd go under a tree. She'd say, "Oh, I found this most wonderful tree." And we'd bring apples from her tree. She loved to steep tea. And we'd always have a wonderful tea under this tree or by a creek. She was really a living paradox. She was an old-fashioned woman of the earth who would pick up half-rotten apples, and you could eat the good part. You can't waste things. And on the other hand, she was a bohemian who saw a new vision. She didn't go for trends and fads of the day, but seemed to see something beyond all that. She absolutely fascinated me. I loved listening to her. A lot of her talking was with movement, with color, with shape. She became one of my dearest, dearest friends. I love spending time with Martha. And then something began to fester in Martha. She would stand up in church and cry about the plight of the Haitian boat people, listen to the news constantly, and be so troubled by what was happening in the world. She would confide in me that she felt useless, felt unloved. And on the evening of June 19th, 1980, she took her own life. This church was completely overflowing. Way back at the foyer, people in the worker room, people who loved Martha. And I thought, if only she could have known how loved she was. Martha gave this town a sense of unconformity, an exotic flavor, so unusual here. And what Martha gave me, besides friendship and a deeper, deeper love of art, was an urgency, a necessity to understand more deeply the signs of mental disturbance, of suicide. And when I got to my new church, immediately started an organization helping teachers understand the signs of suicide and stop them. One thing the church did was to establish a Martha Holden Memorial Scholarship at SIUE. And it's still going on. An art student each year gets a scholarship in Martha's name. Martha is someone I can never forget, nor do I ever wish to forget. She was a bright kind of spirit that brought originality to the people here in the church. And when you have time, please look at her artwork. It's all over my house in Colorado. And thank you for letting me share my memories and rejoicing to be here. You have the same spirit, the same joy as I remember 30 years ago. And it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. You remind me that there is still a lot of trouble in the world. It is still possible to feel useless, and we still do need each other. I approach these Heritage Days with some sort of trepidation, I think, because I sometimes feel that we may get lost in celebrating the past and forget about the future. And then I see the children gather. I know that some of you brought children here today, either your kids or your grandkids, and what I would like to see is the same kind of gathering when these guys bring their kids and their grandkids to this place. We do celebrate those who came before while preparing for those who will come after. As it has been done for us, let us do for others.